Hi, welcome to another episode of Through the Web, where we talk all things tech, business, and internet. And my name is DeGogo.
And I'm Tosif.
And we have a packed show for you today.
I think we do. We'll find out. I mean, we're still fresh from what happened at the WWDC last week. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been given us some time to kind of sink in all the updates. Mm-hmm. The first 24 hours we went in with doing an emergency episode. So mm-hmm. those of you who have watched it, thank you for I guess, you know, taking the time out of your day to to catch us amongst everyone else. Pretty much we're talking about the Vision Pro of mm-hmm. all things. But now that I guess the dust settled a little bit, do you mm-hmm. still feel as I guess enthusiastic about the product?
Yeah, I think I do. For me, it's just that next step of AR, what AR and VR could be. And I know for me, I've been playing around with VR since like 2015 or even before that, because two of my best friends actually at the time, just when we graduated from uni, they actually started a VR company, like a gaming company. So I was working in their office quite a bit when the fledgling Cold Fusion was getting started. And so my friends always used to show me these applications that was coming out in VR. And all, like from that time, I knew that VR had a lot of potential, but it was always this far-off future technology. And there was always just little things that were wrong with it. It would make you sick. The resolution wasn't that great. And I have a PSVR 2 now, and that's a lot better than it was, but there's still some things where the controllers are finicky and you just wish that it would be better. And everything that I saw Apple do just ticked all of those boxes. So I'm still excited about it, long story short.
Yeah, I think everything that has to be said has been kind of said in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, if people have been catching up on the news, you probably would have seen it covered in all different angles pretty much. I mean, you even made a video about it as well. But I think one question that some people have been kind of asking, and I haven't really heard a definitive answer to it, is that will headsets like these eventually replace phones? Mm-hmm. Is that a possibility, do you think, maybe 3 to 5 years down the line?
Well, I guess we have to look at it in two parts. In its current state, I don't think so. The only way I can see it replacing phones is if it's more convenient. Because phones are the most convenient thing we have right now. So literally it would have to be like the glasses you're wearing now, mm-hmm. essentially. That light, that thin, and that's impossible with today's technology. So I don't see it replacing phones. In my video at the end, I said that it is going to be the successor to the iPhone, but in spirit only, because it's a new way of interacting with a computer, but it's not going to be nowhere near as possible. Even the subsequent cheaper versions down the line are going to be nowhere near as popular as the iPhone was. So that's just my view. I don't know. What do you think?
I think in its current state, yes, you're right. I don't mm-hmm. think it will replace phones. But I think it could open up new doors to thinner and smaller ways of communicating. Obviously, you know, Elon Musk has taken that step with Neuralink in terms of really taking it to the extreme point. But I think if something can exist between the headset and, I guess, Neuralink, mm-hmm. I know that's one extreme of the spectrum, but I think something along those lines could potentially help in terms of replacing phones. Because I think a lot of the reaction that I've been seeing with people as well, that those who like it, they like the thought of using it indoors. But walking around in public, or you know, just outside on the park or something like that, is not something you, at least in this current version, people won't mm-hmm. won't be doing it as much. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it'll take something else to come along to I guess evolve from its current state mm-hmm. to be replacing phones altogether.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But I think it's got all the tech and requirements for it to be able to do so, because you know, essentially you can FaceTime, text, work, mm-hmm. entertainment, everything's just there.
Yeah, but it's too heavy and the battery life is exactly. too small.
So, and that's another thing, the battery life, right? Mm-hmm. I think 2 hours, at least its current state, I don't know.
That kind of surprised me in a way, because you know, obviously they're using an M2 processor, and I'm sure the R1 is efficient as well, but Apple's so, I guess, like, tunnel visioned on efficiency of their chips. So to have something that has 2 hour battery life, those chips must be working really hard, really, really hard. So, I thought that was just interesting.
Right. Well, look, we'll cover some stories from over the week. And one thing I want to touch on is the story of Binance. I don't know if you've been keeping...
I got some emails from Binance saying that, like, I think I must have signed up a while ago. I've never transacted on it, but that they were stopping Australian currency conversions and then they restarted it. So something's going on. I don't know what.
Yeah, well, so for those who don't know, the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, was officially accusing Binance earlier last week. And for those who don't know, Binance is the largest cryptocurrency exchange by volume. And they're accusing Binance of breaking U.S. securities rules. What this basically means that it's going in hard on cryptocurrency companies, especially something as big as Binance, right? Mm-hmm. I think they were definitely one of the bigger names during the whole crypto boom over the last few years. And for them to now go after them one by one just seems like they're really taking this seriously. And pretty much 24 hours after that they started officially accusing Binance, they were trying to freeze the assets of Binance. So basically they put an emergency motion for a temporary restraining order filed last Tuesday, saying that it's made this decision to ensure the safety of customer assets. So freezing assets, it's a pretty serious thing for any company. Mm-hmm. And for SEC to do so, pretty much, I don't know if it's just another nail in the coffin for crypto. We'll have to see over the next few weeks how it pans out.
Yeah. I'd say on the one hand of the whole spectrum, you have the government who loves, they love and hate crypto. They love crypto for themselves. Like they would love a government run cryptocurrency that a lot of governments around the world are trying it. But on the other hand, you have, I guess, the cryptocurrency companies where some are good and some are not so good, like FTX. So I guess governments are really trying to either do things right for the people, that's one way of looking at it, or you could say that they're trying to destroy competition for a future currency, which is another way of looking at it. So which one it is, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I guess for them to also be doing it one for the other, because it's not just Binance, they also looked at a few other different companies over the last few months, again, just, I don't know, tells me that they're really trying to get this ball rolling in terms of regulating cryptocurrencies, right? Mm-hmm. Or just the whole market in general. A little too late, you reckon? Because people who would have lost money already did. You've seen the rise of all these scams. And now it's like pretty much, you know, the ones who are holding on or hobbling are probably the more serious ones, because the ones who've lost money have already lost money.
Right. Well, I'm a hodler in that yes. context. And all of this I just see as noise. I don't care. Like it's kind of like, It's the currency. It doesn't matter what exchange, et cetera, as long as you have your own keys and wallet. Don't worry about what's going on. I just see it as another asset class, really. It's a very risky one, could go to zero, but it's still an asset class that's different from everything else. So maybe I have a bit of a different perspective, but this kind of stuff doesn't worry me.
It's interesting because last week also we saw that Nike had sold around 10,000 NFTs or something. And I think, was it Louis Vuitton or another big company were also putting out like a huge volume of NFTs out there as well. So basically, that again, I think there's still some things happening, especially with these big companies. I don't know if they're kind of continuing because they went so deep into the whole NFT world or the Web3 world. But now it just seems like some of them are still trying to transact in those areas, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with Nike, I think they gave them access online to certain things before people bought NFTs. And even though the whole VR headset by Apple, it's not geared towards the metaverse at all, and you couldn't see any trace of that either. I think with what the developers come up with over the next 6 months could potentially change some of that because we don't know what we don't know kind of situation, right?
It's possible, but 6 months is a bit soon. I think that the headset wouldn't even be out then.
It starts launching, what, Jan? We're in June
already. Oh, in Jan?
When it launched? Oh, well, I mean early 2024.
Okay, well, anyway, it will be release day and user base probably wouldn't be there. Like I don't know, like it'll be interesting to see the sales numbers of the headset when it comes out, but to say that the metaverse may be forced into existence by it. I don't know if that's the first thing on everyone's mind. It could just be some indie company somewhere makes this crazy Unity engine-based game that people just love to be in.
That's what I mean. I don't think there's going to be something by Meta or or Apple or something officially, but because it's going to be open source in some ways, or I guess it'll allow for developers to build stuff on for the headsets, right? So, and again, this is a market that's full of enthusiasts. So we have to keep that in mind, that if anybody who would buy it are people who are metaverse freaks, right? So if you can build something that's stable, that's keeping the promises that they had before all this proof of concept, then I think there could potentially be something for that world. I don't know how it look, but just an inkling, I think.
Yeah, no, maybe you're right. Maybe it's the early stages of something, like, you know, like those early iPhone apps when they first were like hits because everyone was obsessed with the touchscreen. Maybe it's the same kind of thing, but more established and better. I don't know. Like, I think just the whole metaverse thing, I even saw a report last week that the metaverse engineers weren't keen, like they're almost like giving up on it. They weren't keen to work on it. So that's, I guess, the Meta Facebook side. But yeah, independent company doing it, maybe that could happen.
Especially with AI, the devs will probably have a lot of resources in their hand.
I actually saw two articles. One was about someone integrating ChatGPT into Minecraft, and another one was into another popular game. I can't remember, but yeah, people were just saying it changed the whole experience. I think the second one was Elder Scrolls. What's that medieval one that a lot of people talk about? How the AI, the NPCs are really crappy.
Is it the Arrow to the Knee thing?
Yes.
Oh, fuck. What's the name of
that? Yeah,
Skyrim?
Skyrim, yeah. So someone modded ChatGPT into Skyrim, and they said it completely changed the experience. So, I think Metaverse, AI, via Apple headsets, and ChatGPT together are going to be a good combination.
Yeah, I mean, again, with all the speculations, it'll be interesting to see how Apple keeps up the hype for it for the next 8 months or so, because obviously there's going to be some pre-orders, but then you don't want no noise for like 8 months. So I think they'll also be releasing a lot of things that they probably have up their sleeves over the next few months to keep that hype train going. So it'll be interesting to see what even Apple comes up with in terms of custom apps in those areas. So one other thing that happened almost kind of under the radar is Linda Yaccarino becoming the new boss officially for Twitter. Obviously, earlier in May, I think, Elon Musk had announced that Linda will take over. I think it was on the 12th of May, but it took almost like 6 weeks for her to have an official start. So for those who don't know, she was previously the head of advertising at NBC Universal, and joined days after Twitter lost its second head of trust and safety. It's interesting because she's coming at a time when Twitter's advertising's down by around 59% compared to last year. So from year to year comparison, that is actually quite a big number. And it's a report that's obtained by the New York Times. For her now to come in and take over this ship and hopefully steady it in some ways will probably be the biggest challenge, right? Mm-hmm. Because even though I think Elon Musk recently tweeted saying that, you know, advertisers are back, everything's going well as usual, but the numbers say otherwise. Now, whether it's because of the whole changeover, whether it's because of the economy or the recession, that's something we'll have to kind of go into. But just looking at numbers on the surface, it's going to be a very, very difficult new few weeks, I guess, for Linda.
Yeah, I also saw a report that, according to some valuations, that Twitter's worth about half of that $44 billion that Musk paid for it. So I think investors aren't too happy with Musk's shenanigans that's been going on. Obviously, that Ron DeSantis
phone call.
Yeah, that was kind of a nice little summary of how Twitter's going at the moment. You know, like, there's been some good things. As I keep saying, the community notes are amazing for like stopping misinformation pretty quickly, maybe not fast enough sometimes. But I feel that, Twitter's just it's a bit of a beast that's kind of a bit out of control in some areas. Like some of the content that comes on is just not well moderated.
Yeah. And we talked about it in detail as well. And I think with the blue check mark as well, and the gap between credible news source and whatnot. But in any case, it's going to be one hell of a task for Linda and a new role to settle into, for sure. Microsoft this week was also ordered to pay $20 million to U.S. federal regulators after it was found to have illegally collected data on children who had started Xbox accounts. Sounds familiar? Because this is very much like the story that happened from last week with the week before about Amazon over its Echo devices. So again, yet another company, big corporation. I thought I'd just put it out there. It's nothing really to add because we've kind of talked about it.
Yeah, but I think, you know, a lot of this comes from the COPPA rules that, you know, were put in place a little while ago. The reason I remember that clearly is because I was at a YouTube conference just maybe weeks after that was announced, and YouTube was one of the biggest companies hit by it because those new COPPA rules meant that you couldn't collect any information on children. So the not safe for kids and safe for kids ranking came up. And a lot of people at this conference were like children's educational content makers. And in a second, their career was over. It was just done. Like there's nothing they could do. So I think it's just kind of going up the chain and kind of tying up those loose ends of what happened in the past and making companies pay for them. But then again, $10 million for Microsoft isn't...
$20
million for Microsoft isn't a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's what... It's like a change.
Yeah, probably like 2 days' earnings or something.
A few hours just for upgrading their GPT-4. We actually have another news from Microsoft's perspective. But before we get into that, what are your thoughts on artificial meat, like lab-grown...
I'm actually quite neutral. I haven't looked into it enough. Like when it was first getting started, like in 2017, et cetera, or 2018, I was like, oh, this is cool, but I don't know if I'd eat it. That's about as far as it went. But apparently some of those companies are failing now or something.
Yeah. So one news that came out this, last week was that researchers at UC Davis, made a discovery saying, and still yet to be peer-reviewed, but the paper detailed that they found that the meat alternative's environmental impact appears to be orders of magnitude higher than retail beef you can get at the grocery store. And itself already a very environmentally damaging was the whole idea, but at least on the current production methods, that's the case. If confirmed, the research could be very much damning for the lab-grown meat industry because it's long seen as a greener alternative to meat products that are involved in slaughter of animals and also the idea of growing animals for produce. So it seems like this is yet to be peer-reviewed, but overall, if that is the case, it does seem like, because it hasn't really taken off as much as you would have expected. And I think I was listening to another podcast where they're talking about how to bring down the cost per gram of protein for these meat, right? And essentially, if it can get to something that's reasonably cheaper, also tastes not even the same but better, only then will people be willing to make that switch.
Okay. So the one question I have about this, I don't know if it's in the report or the news article or whatever, is how is it worse? How is the production methods worse for the environment than raising cattle, et cetera?
So I think it probably takes up a lot more resources. Again, I have to read the actual report, but essentially it just comes down to that, right? Like trying to create, again, that rate of cost per protein, and also I guess in this case they'll probably have that environmental cost per gram of protein
like energy into the machinery, water usage, etc.
Okay,
that's, you know, because the lab grown meat thing, that was like the selling point. Two things, like it didn't hurt animals, and two that it, you know, was safer for the environment. So that's like a major
Did you try any of them?
I haven't tried any. Have you?
I don't know if it's lab grown, but what's the more popular one? Was it Beyond
Meat is the most popular.
Is that lab grown?
I don't know, but it's artificial meat. So I'm
yeah,
not sure.
So, yeah, so I think there's different versions, because artificial meat's also done through restructuring soy sometimes also. Mm-hmm. So I've tried that.
Okay.
If done really well and hidden with lots of different spices and then condiments, only then you can get away with it. Uh-huh. But there's still this plasticky aftertaste for for some of them that are mm-hmm. that are fried. The burgers, sometimes you can't tell. Mm-hmm. But again, it's just layered between probably cheese and sauce and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Only then you're probably like, oh, okay, it's okay. But right. Again, I don't think it's lab grown, because that would be, I think, a different version of it. Mm-hmm. But if it got to a point where it is cheaper, it tastes better, would you make the switch?
Is the nutritional value the same?
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
If that's the case, then yeah. I wouldn't consciously do it, but if it tastes better, that's pretty good.
So if it tastes better, if it's cheaper, and if it's got the same nutritional...
Yeah, like that's all the boxes. So yeah. I think why not? What about you?
Yeah, I think I would, but I think there's something about, I guess, the... like less artificial stuff that definitely tastes better,
right?
And I think it also depends on the places. Like, for example, beef tastes different in different countries because of
what they're fed,
the water there. Yeah. And again, I think there's a little bit of novelty to that in terms of not necessarily beef, but any produce in a lot of ways, right? So yeah, I think I'd probably make the switch, but not 100%. I'd still like to try every now and then. Maybe
I get what you mean. Speaking of processed food, this was actually just an article I read like today, last week actually, and it was by the BBC, and it was talking about like the effect that processed foods can have on our bodies. So they did a study with two twins, identical twins, and for a week. I think a week or 2 weeks, one of them ate like healthier, less processed foods, and another one ate like completely 100%, like super processed foods. And then after that week, they measured and everything. The one that ate the healthier foods actually lost weight. The one that ate the processed foods actually gained weight, and the biomarkers were completely like off. So like the one that ate the processed foods ended up having like slightly higher blood pressure and all these other markers. And that was just after like a week or two.
Wow.
So basically the study was like, you know, guys, you got to stop this. But everyone knows it's like you can't just eat processed foods, but just how bad it is for you. Like I think a lot of people don't realize because they use like certain kinds of elements that are edible, but they used to kind of like glue the food together and preserve it well. But it's just, you know, what that does to your body isn't the greatest. So
have you seen Super Size Me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, did you see it at school?
I saw it around that time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I saw it at school, but it was when it was first came out. And yeah, it was shocking that the length that guy put himself through to just keep eating McDonald's and how he threw up. I think that really got me. But it was just because I do have a phobia of that. Yeah. But I think, it just highlights what they put in that food. And it's kind of like not for regular consumption. I never really was a fast food person 100%. So maybe that's why now that I'm thinking about it, I was like, but anyway, why do you?
No, just reminded me of, you know, the story that you just came up with. That just what reminded me of.
And,
it's also interesting because you see something like Super Size Me, and then a few weeks later you see a random Lad Bible article that says, oh, this man has been eating Big Macs for 25 years. He's completely fine.
Right, yeah. So it's like... There's a guy that's been eating mac and cheese for like 30 years. And
there's so many people like that.
Yeah.
There's like have no issues at all. Like you see, I don't know if it's literally, if it's like life and death, just a random, it's just full of randomness. Because if you look at, you know, people who smoke like, I don't know, 10 packs of cigarettes a day or something, and they have no issue.
I saw this little article, no, this little video of this woman who lived to like 86 or something like that. Or she was still alive. Oh, was it? or was it 96? Like really, really old. And they were asking her like, oh, what's the secret to life and everything? She's like, I drink Dr. Pepper every single day. And they're like, oh, that's not good for you. And then she's like, well, I had two doctors. He told me it wasn't good for me, but they're both dead now. It's like, what? So yeah, it's kind of like maybe it's just super genetics or something that keeps these people alive.
I think you're right, because obviously these are outliers, right? Mm. Because I think
if everyone did that,
I think it would have definitely much more. I mean, it's already an epidemic in some ways, but we'd probably have on the Dr. Pepper epidemic. That would be quite something.
Yeah.
Now, one other news that's been coming out is about the UFOs.
They're back, are they?
Apparently, a whistleblower, former intelligence official, said the government had possession of intact and partially intact alien vehicles. This official, David Grush, who led analysis of unexplained anomalous phenomena within a U.S. Department of Defense agency, has alleged that the U.S. has crafts of non-human origin.
Hmm.
Now, obviously, these are just allegations. I think the government came out and said that, you know, because they did say there was UFO sightings that they confirmed, that they aren't sure where they're from. I think that part's legit. But then this is something that's saying that it's made out of non-human origin, which obviously is the bigger question, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think they've confirmed that bit.
I'd like to know the background of this guy, like, because, you know, obviously his credentials are very high, but, you know, maybe he just had, you know, one too many somethings and went off the deep end, I don't know. But it's so funny because I remember going down this YouTube rabbit hole and finding this guy who was a bit nuts, and he was like saying he was like this computer scientist and said he had these algorithms that could scrape the web and basically slightly predict the future by the sentiments of what people were saying online. And he was saying that, like, yeah, in the next 5 or so years, we'll start hearing about like aliens a lot more. And he called it like the alien deception. And I was like, this is stupid. But then, like, you know, ever since that UFO thing by the Department of Defense, and they showed those images and whatever, like, people started talking about it more. I was like, maybe this guy's onto something. But I don't know what it means. He's like some nuts guy. But I just thought it was interesting that more people are talking about it now. And it's not as, like, weird as it would have been like 10 years ago to come out and say that. Like, and the fact that this guy said that and it's kind of swept under the... It's not a big news cycle. It's kind of like just shows you where we're at. It's like...
I mean, that's also another interesting that I found, that people aren't really that bothered about this. Because I think a lot of people have accepted that, you know, there could... I mean, UFO essentially doesn't mean aliens. I mean,
it could be a bird, but you just can't understand what it is. Yeah, but you don't know,
or it's a different phenomenon that humans haven't discovered before, right? That's earthly, has nothing to do with aliens, right? Mm-hmm. But then there's the whole idea of non-human or non-Earth-based flying objects or made by something that's outside. And that's where things get a little bit... interesting. So I guess until that happens, where there's confirmation that aliens exist, there's going to be, I think, like we've been hearing about the UFO
guy. But the thing is, like, how do you prove it? It's like, okay, I've got this like secret Department of Defense organization, I mean, like subcommittee within the government that has alien spaceships or parts of alien craft that we know are from non-human origin. It's like, how do you prove that? You could show photos, but people are like,
That's Photoshop generative, Phil.
Sorry?
Photoshop generative film.
Yeah, exactly. It could be AI. You could test it, show everything, but people just wouldn't, like, it's like, oh, it's got like lots of exotic materials, and people are like,
I saw this video of this guy who's trying to debunk theories about the ISS being underwater. So apparently there's like this big movement that tries to convince people that the ISS is actually underwater. It's International Space Station. There's actually theories, and I think it stems from the flat Earth stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's like, no, that's underwater. Yeah. And this is like just this guy trying to debunk the entire, like, there's like videos and photos, and that's the thing. And you were right, because what would it take for people to really believe that, okay, something, because in our brains and minds, Hollywood has played such a big part. When we think of aliens, we'll think like little green men, right? Like it'll have to be a corpse of this decaying corpse of this little alien for us to be somewhat convinced. And even then, there's so many like those fake alien photos that go around on Facebook and stuff, right? That has some people convinced, sorry, don't get me wrong. But then for the general consensus or for most people to really believe, what would it take? I don't know.
Like, it's like you could have like a live TV broadcast and then like there's an alien thing that comes on and people are like, oh, that's just CGI. Like there's not really, I don't know.
Have you seen Don't Look Up?
Yeah, of course.
Netflix. I was going to say Netflix documentaries. It does feel like a documentary, doesn't it, these days?
in ways, yeah. apparently that video wasn't about COVID. I mean, that movie wasn't about COVID.
What was it about?
Climate change.
It was actually, yes.
I think we talked about it was made before COVID.
Yeah, we talked about it.
But anyway, so this alien thing, I think it's impossible. It's like the whole post-truth world has kind of taken over. It's like unless something is in front of you directly, not in a VR headset, but you're seeing it with your own two eyeballs, like it's hard to verify, you know?
And even then, it's not enough. You'll have to inspect it, examine it, and then you'll be like, oh, okay, my hands just... touch this green man and it's now starting to decay. It's like toxic stuff just coming out of my hand. Oh, I've lost a hand. Okay, and then be like, oh, now it's an alien. Yes. Do you know about the Fermi paradox?
Yeah.
Yes. For those who don't know, it's this idea or like it is an idea that the discrepancy between the lack of conclusive evidence of aliens or extraterrestrial life and the high priori likelihood of its existence. So both are almost equally likely that it does and it doesn't, and just the arguments on both sides are just as convincing. So the idea that it does exist versus it doesn't is...
I did watch this video that apparently that general idea of the Fermi paradox is actually wrong. It's not what the initial guy said.
Apparently it's by someone else. It shouldn't be... Yeah, like the Fermi's the physicist or someone?
I'm not sure, but...
We've got the setup too.
I might be talking about behind, but apparently it was the whole clause was it's supposed to be, or the condition was that aliens have not visited us before, not the fact that aliens exist. So there were two different things. But regardless... I think one of the common theories is that aliens may not exist because, or I guess it's just kind of like a certainty or probability that when you get to a certain development in your societal ranking or whatever, or like your intelligence, you end up blowing each other up and killing each other. So it's kind of happened over and over again, but they no longer exist because over the vast expanses of time, they've all blown themselves up. So
we also haven't seen a good alien movie in a while. You think about that because in the 80s and 90s you'd have so many
Independence Day was pretty recent, wasn't it? you're probably right. There's probably a whole bunch of B-grade movies out there, but a good alien movie, I think it's time. I think we need another one.
Maybe the next one will be done by AI that we talked about. So.
Please.
Just type up. sticking with things flying...
This is a weird episode. Go on.
Same with things flying in the sky. So have you heard the story of this AI drone apparently killing its operator?
Yes. And I've heard the both sides of the truth and the non-truth. Yeah.
Yeah. So for those who aren't aware, last week there was a story about this colonel from the Air Force in the USA, the Army of Air Force. He basically described a simulated test in which a drone powered by AI was advised to destroy an enemy's air defense system. And ultimately, it attacked anyone who interfered with that order. The system started realizing that while they didn't identify the threat, at times the human operator would tell it not to kill that threat, but it got points by killing that threat. So what did it do? It ended up killing the operator. It killed the operator because the person was keeping it from accomplishing its objective. That's what he said in a blog post that he released. He said that they haven't trained the system to not kill the operator. That's bad. But instead, it started destroying the communications tower that the operator uses to communicate with the drone from trying to stop it from killing the target. No real person was harmed. It was all a simulation. And this story leaked out, or not leaked, but more like the story got a lot of legs, and it turned into AI operator kills. Sorry, AI drone kills human operator. Mm. And obviously you have those crazy TikToks that just covered the story. And turns out that the US Air Force spokesperson came out and denied all of this, saying that none of the simulation took place. And apparently the person called Dr. Hamilton misspoke, and he also came out saying that, yeah, I misspoke. This is something that was a hypothetical situation, which kind of made the whole thing a little bit more sketchy than it needs to be. But given that where it's at, it just seems like stories like this will, again, just has people's curiosity going back to that whole idea of Hollywood, of robots taking over and AI killing humans and all that kind of stuff. And the more you, I guess, get into that kind of zone, the more people will, I guess, buy that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's for the side of people buying it. But for this, as for the story itself and what he told, to me it just sounds like a slight tweak of the paperclip problem. Like, you've heard of that, right?
No.
So it's where you have an AI system and you tell it, oh, please make as many paperclips as you can for me. So the AI goes and makes some paperclips and then it uses all the metal and runs out. And then it's like, oh, there's other stuff here I could use. And then it ends up turning people into paperclips and all everything else into paperclips until the whole world is just paperclips. That's like quite a famous example of AI going rogue. You give it a goal. It's not clearly defined and acts in ways that you don't expect. So I think he kind of just tweaked that story and did it for that. So, yeah.
No, that makes sense. I think we're in that AI zone now in this whole episode. Which I think we also decided to call it like with rabbit hole or something.
We need
to have a name for a part of the podcast where we kind of go rogue. And stuff.
Yes.
Well, we just start talking about script. Stuff. But we're definitely talking about AI stuff in this part of the podcast because the next story is also about AI. It's actually about Bing. And I'll just read this verbatim from an article on The Verge by someone called Sean Hollister, I think he's a journalist there. He said that it was time for me to download the Google Chrome on a new Windows 11 computer. That's just how the article starts. Okay. It's hilarious. But it was time for me to download the Google Chrome on a new Windows computer. I typed Chrome into the Microsoft Edge search bar. I was greeted with a full-screen Microsoft Bing AI chatbot window, which promptly told me it was searching for Bing features. I picked my jaw up from the floor and tried again. Same result every time. Same exact text too. And the thing is, this is clearly not Microsoft's GPT-4 power chatbot at work. It's a completely canned interaction. I get it to work on a different computer across the country, and a colleague tells me that he saw the same thing setting up his wife's gaming laptop. Microsoft just gave itself a full screen ad in search results by faking an AI interaction. And in this search result, Microsoft was juicing its own product instead of respecting its users' intent. Just seems something that Microsoft would do.
I don't know. Like, Bing is cool and all, but I think the way that Microsoft goes about some things is very scummy. And so, for example, like Windows always wanting to install updates, that really got to me. Also, the Bing search, sorry, like in Bing, the browser, when you have... You have all these stupid charms on the side, like you have like games and whatnot, and it just looks so tacky, but it's just like, it's just there because they want to advertise more stuff. But this doesn't surprise me at all. I think it's just maybe the whole hype over being the only search engine powered by AI is no longer the only one in town. So maybe they're getting a little desperate.
Yeah, and it just feels like something... That again, like I said, like I mean, Microsoft is known to really push their products on its customers or people, right? But stuff like this, it makes it hard for us to take Microsoft seriously because, again, when we wanted to get access to Bing's first version with the ChatGPT, we're powered by OpenAI's ChatGPT. We were like, how can we get it? And it's like, oh, you have to download the app, you have to get in line using the Outlook emails. I don't want to be doing all that kind of stuff, right? And again, you have to have the product speak for itself because otherwise you can't really force feed people to get.
And it's something that does the opposite.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And it's something they haven't learned. I know we aren't, and some people said, almost sound like Apple fanboys, but that's something Apple does.
There's Google too, guys.
Exactly, in some ways. Google doesn't do that as much even. So again, this seems like such a Microsoft issue.
Yeah. Maybe it's just the DNA left over from Bill Gates when he used to like force his hand on competition and crush them, and you know, the whole Internet Explorer and Netscape Navigator, that kind of thing. I think Microsoft is just a very forceful company. And in terms of how OpenAI even was like put under pressure to just release everything just ahead of everyone else, like I think that's just the way that they work. It's work fast and force people to get stuff instead of work fast and break things.
Look, at this part of the podcast, we're kind of structured a bit differently. So what we'll ask you is what you've watched this week.
So one thing I watched was this guy who made like a little 5-minute video on one part of the Apple keynote, which everyone missed. It was like a small little detail where Apple was playing this game. In the presentation, there was a MacBook playing a game. In the top right, you could see like one of those CPU monitors, and one of the text, you know, said like DirectX 12. So it's showing that Apple's actually translating DirectX 12 graphics on the Mac locally instead of having to do it through this translation layer and everything, which would be absolutely revolutionary for Mac gaming, because right now everything on the Mac doesn't support DirectX 12, which all games on Windows basically use all modern ones anyway. So this was actually a major announcement and by itself could change the landscape of Mac gaming, but everyone missed it because of the virtual reality stuff. Yeah. So I thought that was cool, and I'm looking forward to seeing what Apple Silicon can do, because a few more games are actually coming, like No Man's Sky that's been ported, and Stray is coming, if you remember that game. And just the fact that it's going to be running locally, I think, is pretty exciting.
Cool. Anything else you watched? No? Nope. Nothing.
Nah, I think we're out. I think that's it.
Okay.
What about you?
I watched this video about a lot of these athletes based in Norway. They run for 24 hours in an indoor stadium in circles. That's called an ultra marathon, and it's called the Bislett 24-hour indoor challenge, and it's held in the basement of the Bislett Stadium in Oslo, Norway. And it basically has all these people just running in circles for 24 hours as part of a marathon. And some of the numbers that they do in these 24 hours are incredible. You see, like, and this video is basically this guy who himself is a runner who visited that place trying to really understand, like, what's the motivation for you wanting to do it. And for most of them, it was like the ultimate test of their capabilities of their human bodies. Somebody who did like 217 kilometers by the end of the event, just like, this is just, you know, this is the toughest thing that I do every year. This is something I look forward to every year because it sets me up for the rest of the year kind of thing. And it's just centers their life around it. The video also kind of showed how some of these athletes were just couldn't do it because some people, you know, like, it's overestimated how far they could go. And this guy who's done it like a few times, like, he comes back every year. Just insane just to think what some of these
people... They should study him. Like, 24, like, so you're not, there's no tricks, 24 hours constantly running?
No, just 24 hours constant running, yeah. And obviously they probably have, like, you know, energy gels that they have while they're running, but
so nonstop, they can't even stop for a drink of water or like
usually. I mean, obviously you can't just walk in some space, but yeah, you have to keep kind of going in that indoor stadium as well. And so it's basically just cement, and it's not even like you're looking at nice places and stuff. It's just an indoor stadium, just this whole big circle, and people just keep running and running and running. Wow. And the video explores basically, you know, goes to some of these athletes essentially and just asks them what motivates you to do that. And it all kind of boils down to just them really pushing their body to the limits and, I guess, learning something about themselves in the process. Mm. So, yeah, that was something that I watched and was like, wow, I mean, that's incredible if you think about it. And to me, that is a testament to what humans are capable of, mm-hmm, in terms of, obviously, you know, there's a lot of other ways to look at it. Like, for example, I saw this picture of a lot of dead bodies on Mount Everest, like people who tried reaching the summit but couldn't. And somebody was like, oh, all of these people were motivated once, take a seat or something like that. Like in a demotivating kind of joke.
Someone said that?
yeah, like a meme kind of thing. Like all these people were motivated at one point, so maybe relax.
Okay.
You know, like those kind of dark memes kind of thing, right? And that's another way of looking at it, because we are only looking at the survivors and survivor bias in some ways, right? But then those who do, that whole idea of reinventing themselves and just humans with their curiosity and especially their capabilities with their bodies, with their minds, I think just incredible. I think this is one of those things.
Yeah, I never heard of that, and that's actually quite fascinating.
I'll link in the description. I'll send it to you as well.
Yeah, I didn't think that was humanly possible, but...
Well, there you go.
There you go, yeah. So yeah, that whole story of human grit and integrity, ingenuity, whatever, reminds me of the 4-minute mile thing, right? So for all of human recorded history and the whole of recorded Olympic events and all of this, it was thought that the 4-minute mile was impossible. And then in 1954, there was this guy, I can't remember his name, that managed to do it.
Right.
And then suddenly after that, every year, someone managed to do that as well. So I think the mental aspect of it is something that's quite fascinating as well.
Yeah, it breaks barriers as well. So
sorry?
It breaks barriers as well, like for a lot of humans thinking that, you know, that's my limit, like that's what's possible, and then somebody comes and breaks it kind of thing. So
yeah, definitely. All right. Well, I think that's the end of today's episode. Thanks for watching and thanks for listening. Stay away from aliens, and we'll see you again next time. Cheers.